Good to see you here this morning and to our online group. We're glad that you have tuned in with us. It is the upper here of everything that we do is for the glorification of God. It's for our worship for Him and for the salvation of our souls. We do these things. There's a few things you learn as you get older in this life, and that is you just can't seem to avoid conflict. It seems like it's everywhere you turn in different shapes and different modes. Some of us get pretty good at ducking it. Some of us have to deal with it directly. And one thing that we do find out is that it's required of us from God's Word. There is going to be conflict. If you turn to Galatians, the sixth chapter, it's a passage that when you look at it, it kind of brings a little fear to your heart because it's requiring things of you that most of us do not feel comfortable doing. So I'm going to read you the first several verses here of Galatians chapter 6. Brethren, if a man is overtaken in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, considering yourself, lest you also be tempted. Bear one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. For if anyone thinks himself to be something when he is nothing, he deceives himself. But let each one examine his own work, and he will have rejoicing in himself alone and not in another. For each one shall bear his own load. Let him who is taught with the word share all good things with him who teaches. So when you read this, what do you see? I look at it, and from my perspective, I see conflict. Look at the first one. A brother at fault needs restoration versus the spiritual brother who must consider himself. That there's a conflict there. Who's qualified to do that? A spirit of gentleness and meekness versus a spirit of condemnation and judgment, which some of us have at different times in our life. Look at the next one. A consideration that he's asking us to press on versus bringing more temptation into my own life. Why would I want to get involved with this if it's going to tempt me more than I already am? The next one, bearing your burdens, the heavy load of trying to get someone to restore versus bearing my own burden, which is down in verse 5, the work that Jesus would have me do. I see a conflict there. I want to do just what I want to do, not what I think I need to do. Look at this one, thinking that I am something versus thinking you are nothing. How hard is that to deal with? How about being spiritual versus being deceived? Because, you know, the first thing you had to do up here in verse 1 was determine who that spiritual person was. And if you have elected yourself or you have told yourself that you're that person, are you deceiving yourself? Another conflict. Then there's an examination, the proving of my work to myself. Versus what I really want to do is prove my work by comparing myself to others and deciding that I'm okay. There's a rejoicing in what work has been provided through God versus a rejoicing and a glad that I'm not you, the one who's in sin here who needs to be restored. There's a conflict in the idea of continuing and well-doing versus the idea of just giving up. It's somebody else's. Let somebody else deal with this. So in looking at all this, if you don't have any kind of a context here, this looks like a pretty daunting list. I would have you consider a couple of things. The Galatian church had its own issues. Galatia, being a church of Gentiles, Jews were involved in that church also. The conflict arose about whether the law of Moses was still intact, and they wanted to push them back to that. So Paul, in his letter to the Galatians, and especially, not only it starts in chapter 1 and goes all the way through chapter 5, it's basically asking, who was it that deceived you, that told you that going backwards to the old law was the law that would save you? Rather, it's the law of Christ, the spiritual law that I imparted to you. That's the one that you need to stay with. Look at verse 26 of chapter 5. Let no one become conceited, provoking one another, envying one another. You go back to verse 22, but the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness, goodness, and faithfulness. But these were not the things that they were doing. They were devouring one another and in their conflict that they had with one another. So if you put all that in context and you come to chapter 6 and verse 1, who would the spiritual person be? Would that be someone that's... Well, let me ask you this. How do you grade yourself? Are you spiritual enough that you could restore someone that's in a trespass? I would suggest to you that what we generally want to do with this is pass it to somebody else. Somebody that we feel has more zeal, more fervor, more education. That's the one that he's talking about here. I would suggest to you he's talking to each and every one of us. Think of the comparison again. If you were under the old law, you were not spiritual. You only became a spiritual creature when you became under the law of Christ. That's what he's talking about here. So in the Galatian church, who would that be? It would be those who adhered to the teachings that Paul had left, those who were trying to be what Christ would have wanted them to be, what Paul is trying to teach them to be, those who would be led by the Spirit and not by the old law and a certain amount of legalism. So then you come to this idea of restoration. Wow, that's a big word. Because that idea, restore, has the idea of mending, repairing. And the verb tense there suggests that it's an ongoing process that takes patience and perseverance. So who wants to get involved in that? You know, it's these issues like this that we come to that we want to read the scripture, we want to move on to the next chapter, and let's get past this one. Because so much is being required, so much is being asked of us here. Restoration, the idea of bringing somebody who's in a fault, who has sinned in their life, who's taken a path that's not good for them, and you're going to help them get back to where they were. And any of you who have been involved, think about your own children, the paths that they have taken, your efforts to try to steer them back to what you feel like would be a correct path. You didn't just say it one time. You didn't do it just one time. When they were younger, it took many repetitions to get them to behave as you would have them behave. And as they got older, you found that that method of communication changed and it became different. So what did it take? Having two daughters myself, I can tell you if you want to get hardline, they can get hardline real quick too. And nothing is accomplished. But what works better is a spirit of gentleness, meekness that he talks about here. You who are spiritual, restore such a one with a spirit of gentleness, considering yourself, lest you also be tempted. Well, what in the world is the consideration there? What do I need to consider? Well, there's a lot. Do you have a gentle and meek spirit? If you don't, it's required of you. It's not optional. Is your humility in place? Are you looking at yourself too while you're looking at them? Remember what I told you. When I had you go back and look at verse 26, the idea about being conceited and about provoking one another and envying one another. So it's this whole concept that it's almost like you've got conflict constantly going. Here we're talking about restoration, that the last thing you need is conflict. The conflict is already there. The conflict that this person has sinned and has deviated from the path that he needs to be on. And so he says, lest you also be tempted. So you look at your pride, you look at your ego, do you have it in check? Is the sin that he's involved in, is it something that's going to tempt you, try you, and pull you in with it also? Can you stay humble enough to do what needs to be done in the restoration of this person? Do you have a full understanding of your own weaknesses? You know, think of it this way. Usually when we think of someone spiritual, we think of somebody that has their life in control. But let me ask you, brethren, name me one spiritual person that hasn't sinned themselves, that doesn't have a constant battle in their life keeping sin in check in their own life. Isn't it the person that you would have come to you that would tell you, I've been where you've been. I understand what you're going through. Because see, if you look down here in the next verse, 2, bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. That burden right there is defined as a heavy load. It's a it's a load that taxes somebody. It's not a purse. It's not a billfold. We're talking about something that drags you down and weighs you down. And so who is it pulling down? The one who has sinned. They have a heavy load, a burden that has to be dealt with. And you are being instructed in verse 2 to pick it up with them, to carry it with them, to help them carry that load. It didn't say in verse 2 for you to take it and carry it all by yourself. It's a sharing of that load. It's the willingness to involve yourself in their lives to help with this burden. And then he modifies it. So fulfill the law of Christ. Well, go back with me again. You're in Galatia. You're in that church. You want to hang on to the old law? How are you going to fulfill the old law of Christ under that law? You can't. So the spiritual person in verse 1 had to be that one who converted, as Paul taught them, and has held on to it and is holding on to it. Brethren, isn't that all of us? Haven't we all named the name of Christ and become his servants? So to fulfill the law of Christ, what is that? This idea of bearing one another's burdens. Isn't it the concept that love God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and love your fellow man as yourself? On these two principles hinge all the laws and the prophets. The two things that Christ has asked of all of us. And this is the fulfilling of the law. So when you look at verse 2, it makes it more difficult to point to somebody else and say, this is your responsibility, this is not mine. If it's mine, how can you fulfill the law of Christ if you don't embrace this yourself and become involved in this also? So we look at all this and we kind of work our way down the list here. You know, it's this whole idea of fulfilling the law of Christ, bearing one of those burdens. And I want you to look at verse 5 because it looks like a conflict. For each one shall bear his own load, okay? His own burden, depending on how your version reads. So in verse 2, you bear one another's. In verse 5, it tells you that we can only bear our own. But there's a difference in what the load is there. There's a difference in what the burden is. In verse 5, you're talking about service. You're talking about work. You're basically talking about your job. Think of it like a cargo that a ship carries. That's what it's for. Think about a soldier who carries a backpack. That's his load. That's his job, is to carry that, to be ready, to be prepared. So what is the work that a Christian does? That's what's being discussed here in the prior verses. If you want to fulfill the law of Christ and do the service that is required of you, then isn't verse 2 coming into play where you are to help? We assist one another. We help one another with the burdens that we carry. And all of this is for what purpose? Just to fulfill a law? That's absolutely part of it. But it's for the glorification of God and of his Son and the law that was left of us. It's the idea that you're doing the opposite in chapter 6 of what was being talked about in chapter 5, where they were eating and devouring one another with their conflicts. Have you been in a situation where the conflict was so intense that that looked like that's what happened? Good people on both sides warring against one another for a common cause that are diametrically opposed, and there's no reconciliation, there's no service, there's no anything. God is not glorified in something like that. And Paul is showing them the error of them going back under the old law. Don't go back. Stay where you are. Stay where I taught you. And look at these things. You look at verse 5, the idea of examining yourself. And when you look at that, you go back to verse 1. Okay, so who is spiritual? Am I spiritual enough? Do I have enough compassion? Do I have enough mercy? And I would suggest to you that boils down to you, do you really have enough love for your fellow brethren? I will be the first to tell you that in growing up, this is one of the areas that you stayed away from. It was easier to war over things than it was to help. It was easier to take scripture that you wanted to contend with each other on and do that rather than to turn to someone who was lost or who had lost their way and go get them and pull them back in. Because that's an involvement. That's why the work to restore carries the idea of perseverance. It takes time. It's going to take energy. It's going to take effort. It's going to be a load in verse 2, but it's your work in verse 5. So you look at all these things and you have to try to put this together and come to some conclusion for yourself then. The spiritual person then in verse 1 is the only condition that is acceptable to Christ, isn't it? Were there two camps here in Galatia, the spiritual and the unspiritual? That's what he's talking about here. So the unspiritual had no responsibilities, only the spiritual did? No, he's trying to correct an error. He's trying to correct a wrong. Everyone in that congregation needed to be spiritual. Everyone in the congregation needed to be involved with each other, the helping, the carrying of burdens, that they would fulfill the law that was laid out before them. You know, you remember when Jesus said, "A new commandment I give you," over in John 13, "that you love one another as I have loved you, that you also love one another. By this all will know that you are my disciples if you have love for one another." So it kind of changes the tone of all this, doesn't it, a little bit? So in my earlier days when I looked at chapter 6 and going, let's just move on to, what's the next book? Oh, Ephesians 1. Let's just turn over there, because I don't think that I'm spiritual enough to restore someone that's in a wrong. So what are the prerequisites for that? Do you think about the things that are required of you to look at this and to be involved in these things? 2 Corinthians, the 10th chapter, verses 1 through 7. "But he who glories, let him glory in the Lord." Verse 18. "For not he who commends himself is approved, but whom the Lord commends." Brethren, isn't that what we all want, is to be commended of God for the work that we have here? Go back even further to verse 12 of chapter 2 Corinthians 10. "For we dare not class ourselves or compare ourselves with those who commend themselves, but they, measuring themselves by themselves and comparing themselves among themselves, are not wise." So let's look at this again. Let me read it one more time as we close here this morning. "Brethren, if a man is overtaken in any trespass..." So let's stop right there. That's a brother that we're talking about. We're talking about a member of this congregation. We're talking about anyone who is a brother. You who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, considering yourself, lest you also be tempted to exalt yourself, to put them down, because it's their problem, not your problem. No. Can't do that. "Bear one another's burdens, saddle it up with him, stand beside him with it, and fulfill the law of Christ that is requiring you to be there with him to help him to be restored. For if anyone thinks himself to be something when he is nothing, he deceives himself." So you got to go, well, wait just a minute. You just told me in verse 1 that I have to decide that I'm spiritual. Brethren, yes, you do have to decide that you're spiritual. You do have to decide that you are doing what God would have you do. You have to make that conscious decision that you are going to be what the Lord will want us to be, that we will be the servant that he wants us to be. We will carry the load that he's asked us to carry. Because if you do anything less than that, you deceive yourself. "But let one examine his own work, and then he will have rejoicing in himself alone and not in another. For each one shall bear his own load." Your service to God is to keep yourself examined, to keep yourself spiritual, to help the brethren, help our brethren who have fallen by the wayside, those who are weak, those who need help, those who need encouragement. Brethren, these are not new words. You know, if I've learned anything in the last several years is that it's not imparting new stuff to ourselves that needs to be done. It's remembering those things that have already been taught. There's things that we have learned that we may have forgotten, that we may have forgotten the application of. And it's these things that we need to keep before us that we complete the task and the work that God would have us. Let him who has taught the word share in all good things with him who teaches. Do not be deceived. God is not mocked, but whatever a man sows, that will he also reap. You know, there were some farmers that tried an experiment. They took their yield from their crop, and it was huge. It was just a great yield. They kept all the good stuff to themselves. They took the piddly little seeds and the weak stuff, and they planted it back in the ground, thinking that they would get the same yield again. Like they could trick, quote, Mother Nature into making this great increase again. Well, they actually got less than what they planted. What they got out of that wasn't even edible. It was worse than where it started. And so do we, in our own concept of our service to God, think that if we do just a little service, if we do just a little spirituality, that that is pleasing to God? I would suggest to you that I'm not suggesting that you run in full bore ahead with no concern. He's telling you how to do it here. He's giving you a script on how to help someone who is in need, who needs to be restored. For he who sows to the flesh, verse 8, of the flesh reaps corruption, but he who sows to the Spirit, with the Spirit, will reap everlasting life. In verse 9, the last one, let us not grow weary while doing good, for in the season we shall reap if we do not lose heart. Therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all, especially those who are of the household of faith. What is the doing good that he's talking about there? Is it not the items we just talked about here in chapter 6? Those who are in need, need help. Your service is to help to provide that. And it is a wearisome work, verse 9. I mean, he doesn't sugarcoat it. He doesn't tell you that it's easy. And he doesn't tell you that it's going to be quick, you know, because that's the way we like to do things. I don't want to be involved that deeply. I don't want to, that's going to take time and material and energy that I need to save for other things. I appreciated John's words last Sunday morning about where our time goes. Yes, I'm tired like everybody else is tired, but I'm not tired because of my service to Christ. I'm tired because of the other things that have demanded my time that I have let take over. So what is the lesson for me here is, what am I growing weary in? If you're doing so little for the work of the cause here, in the restoration of others, in the doing good that is required of us, how are you going to stand before God and give an account for yourself for that? I want you to look at one word in verse 10, the word opportunity. As we have opportunity. Opportunity means that a situation has presented itself and you have the ability to address it. And so there's a responsibility to act on it. Think on these things, brethren, and we never know what the hearts are of those who are present here this morning. And to our members who are online, I just want you to remember this. Some are sick. Some of our brethren are sick. Some of them are tired. Some of them need to be rescued. Some of us are here. Some of us are sheltering in place. But we're still the congregation that meets here at Billy Hext. And we need to learn to reach out in the different ways that are available to us, to care for one another, to fill the needs that we would have with one another. Because if you think it's any less important now than it was a year ago when we were all here in this room, I would suggest to you that it's even more important today because we are so diffracted from each other. It's difficult to assemble. We have those who are fearful that understand that. I do. And we would recommend and encourage you to stay safe. To stay safe. And to those who are sick, we pray for your wellness, that you are able to overcome the things that are happening in your life. To those who need rescue, that's our work. That's the work of all of us here, not just mine and John's, but everybody here. And we have those who do need to be rescued. Some have just taken turns, have used this as a time to do other things in their life because it's convenient and it makes it easy. And brethren, don't think that doesn't appeal to me or any of us. It does. It's a whole lot easier to do things when you're not really accountable to one another. If you don't think attendance does anything, it does keep the accountability in place. Because when we are apart, you feel less susceptible to one another and less like we're there to encourage one another. Think on these things, brethren, and if there's anything that we can do or be of service to you in any way, we'd ask you to come while together we stand and sing this morning.